If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, today's episode had kind of a funny little serendipitous plot twist.
Yeah, you just never know what you might run into.
That's right. I picked a topic because it's something I had seen in the news. And it turns out it's got a very familial tie-in.
Yeah, like I'm going to be there.
Kind of, but this guy won't be there.
No, you better not be there. I don't want to meet this guy.
So we're going to do an episode
about... Not that I'm his type or anything.
About Edward Kramer.
Yes.
And Edward Kramer was one of the founders of something called Dragon Con, which took place in, which takes place in Atlanta.
Right. It was founded in like 1997, and it is a like science fiction type, you know, like the cons, all the things. People dressed up.
1987.
Oh, 87. Yeah. And it's all the characters, people dress up as it, and they have all these writers and science fiction things and stuff like that.
But the one thing it is not related to, which made me think of it initially, was Kramer v. Kramer.
Well, that's right, or Kramer off of Seinfeld.
That's right.
But the boys are going to be down there doing Taz. And so they're performing,
the Adventure Zone.
The Adventure Zone. And they're going to be down there performing Thursday. No, they're performing Friday. And we're going down there, too, because they're doing a couple shows in Atlanta, then a couple shows in Orlando. And we're going to be down there babysitting. So I'm going to be down there at the place where this guy helped found.
That's right. Now,
little did I know.
Little did you know. So Dragon Con, as we said, it was founded in 1987. It takes place over Labor Day weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. And as of 2017... The attendance was over 80,000 people. And basically, it takes place in five hotels in the Peachtree Center neighborhood of downtown Atlanta near the Olympic Park. They have tons of programming, like Tommy said, for science fiction, fantasy, comic book, and things like that. Basically, it was founded by a board of directors, which included a couple different people. John Bunnell, David Cody, Robert Dennis, Mike Helba, Pat Henry, and the aforementioned Ed Kramer.
I've never heard any of those guys tell you the truth.
Well, I think Ed Kramer is the only like real famous one.
And that's not for the right reasons.
No. So the name Dragon, this is kind of interesting, the name of the dragon for the con came from from Ed Kramer's Dragon computer. Because he had a Dragon computer back in the day, back in like 87, which actually was a Radio Shack caller computer, but it was a European version called a Dragon. And they had their own bulletin board system, or BBS. They called the Dragon, and that served as the central hub for their organization there, for their club, for Dungeons & Dragons. And so, based upon that, they formed this thing called Dragon Con.
Hmm. So, well, all right, I guess that makes sense. So it was a bunch of Dungeons & Dragons enthusiasts.
That's right. So any of our listeners that don't know what a BBS is, or a bulletin board system, I actually had my own BBS system back in the day.
You were ahead of the time. You were on your... Nintendo 300 or something. I don't know.
No, my BBS ran on a an IBM, I forget which one it was, but it actually didn't even have a hard drive. I had 2 3.5 floppy disks that I was able to work it off of, which was kind of amazing in itself that I was able to program it that way. But my BBS came on after 11 p.m. after we went to bed. And the way it worked is there was a modem in the computer attached to the phone. And so when somebody called, my computer essentially answered. And once they did, they got to visit my site, which was hosted completely on my computer. So it's kind of like a precursor to the internet, if you're not familiar with what a BBS system was.
And you were quite popular. All kinds of calls all night long.
I was kind of a nerd, I guess.
Mike's bulletin board.
Yeah, I forget what I called it. I can't remember. I think I had some sort of clever name probably, you know.
I'm sure it was.
But I did not have my own independent phone line for it, so I had to run mine from 11 o'clock at night. I basically would...
After your parents were in bed.
After they were in bed, I would go down, turn the ringer off so it wouldn't ring at night. And then before I got up in school in the morning, I'd turn the ringer back on and take my BBS offline. And I'd have different visitors who would come to my computer over the course while I was asleep and visit and leave messages and things like that.
So if anyone called in the middle of the night with an emergency, you all were just SOOL.
What is the W?
SOOL.
Oh, okay.
There is no W.
We're swole? Yeah, I guess so. I never really thought about it. Yeah, Mom and Dad didn't care because...
didn't know.
The phone didn't ring, so they were
They fine. Didn't know it. You were doing that, probably.
Probably not. They didn't have much of an idea.
Wouldn't have understood it if you'd have told them.
But it was really interesting back in the day because they actually published like books that were phone books where you could find different numbers for different BBSs. And some of them... I mean, this is back when long-distance rates applied, so if you wanted to call them, you'd have to pay long-distance phone costs to call these different things and stay online and do it.
So you were probably like Steve Martin in The Jerk when the publication came out and your phone number was in there for it. You were like, I'm somebody. I'm somebody now.
Yeah,
Look at me. I'm on my bulletin boards listed. I'm somebody.
Well, I was actually never that big of a bulletin board where I got to do that. So mine was kind of a smaller experiment thing I did like in seventh and eighth grade. So
we'll get back to Ed Kramer.
Yes. Ed Kramer.
Fellow
bulletin board enthusiast.
Yes. You saw the picture of this guy, right?
I did.
He looks like some kind of cross between like Jerry Garcia and what was that, like Jumblewort or something, that guy on Harry Potter, the big burly guy with the beard.
Yeah, with a little bit of mixture of the primary villain from Mad Max, Thunder Road, mixed in there with some tubes.
Yeah, yeah. The guy is just, I mean, if you looked at him, you'd say, yeah, I think he's guilty.
Yeah.
You just judge him by looking at him.
So they started this back in 87, and Dragon Con continued to grow, and everything was just basically fine and dandy until the year 2000.
August of 2000. And this is August.
That's right.
Well, you know, it's like an anniversary, per se.
Sort of. I'll be an infamous one. Kramer was arrested on August 25th following an investigation spurred by an anonymous tip. And he was charged with molesting three teenage boys. The investigation revealed that he had previously been accused of molestation back in 97, but then the alleged victim back then recanted. And before Kramer was arrested, he had a reputation for inappropriate relationships, essentially. And according to one magazine, he was constantly surrounded by young boys. So that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, at these cons especially, he would be surrounded by them. They called them Ed's boys.
That's right. Now, the two of the victims, they were half-brothers, and Kramer was actually dating their mother. And the mother came forward claiming that he had touched them inappropriately. And then the third victim was somebody else. That's essentially who the victims were.
Right.
But they think that basically he was dating the mother to get closer to the boys is the thought process of what took place.
I would think so. I've heard those type things happen before.
Now, once he was arrested, he was put on bond, which we've talked about before, what bond is.
Right.
And so you're arrested on a preliminary, you're arrested on some charges, and then basically you enter a plea of not guilty, and then the judge will generally set a bond for you.
Right.
Well, this guy, you know, he was he was pretty well off, actually. He had a little bit of money. And so he made bond, but a condition of his bond was that he was placed on house arrest. But one of the conditions was that he was not to have any contact with young children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was on his pretrial detention and house arrest for about a week when he was reportedly visited by a teenage boy. So he was put back in jail. And so then subsequent to that, in 2001, before he still hadn't gone to trial yet, he suffered some sort of spinal injury while in jail. He basically got beat up in jail.
Yeah.
I think one report said it was by some of the guards, possibly. And the judge allowed him to go back on house arrest in January of 2001. So he basically served on house arrest from 2001 until 2008, whenever his travel ban was lifted. So you might ask yourself, he was charged in 2000. In 2008, he's still on pretrial. Doesn't that seem a little odd?
It seems very odd. But now, let me make sure that we make one thing clear. He no longer has anything to do with DragonCon.
No.
As of 2000, when he was arrested, they removed him from it, or he removed himself or whatever, but he was no longer associated with it since 2000.
Right. He still owned an interest of it until 2013, but he was eventually bought out from it. So there was a legal dispute about that.
Well, that's when he actually came to trial, was 2013, I think, wasn't it?
So in 2008, the travel ban was lifted, and he was still in home confinement awaiting trial. Now, during that time period, he had claimed numerous medical issues and things going that why the trial needed to be continued and this, that, and the other. And
he was in too bad a shape to go.
Yeah, I can only imagine that he probably had three or four different attorneys during that period, too. But basically, the case kept getting continued. And for whatever reason, the judges didn't push the case forward or felt like there was good reason why it should not go forward. And
actually, in 2008, it was delayed due to the presidential election.
That's right. I was going to get into that. When the travel ban was lifted, he was allowed to travel between the states of New York, New Jersey, and Georgia because his mother, he was actually from New York, was having some medical issues. And so the court said, you can travel up there to spend time with your mother and help her out with her medical needs. And basically, as long as he gave proper notice to the district attorney that where he was going to be and what he's going to be doing, that it was fine for him to travel like that. Well, additionally to that, he actually wanted to travel before that. In 2006, he had asked his attorney to allow the court to see if he could travel to Israel to explore immigrating there as part of a plea agreement, basically leaving the country. So he's been trying to, basically get out of Georgia, essentially. It was part of his plan. But actually, Israel would not allow someone convicted of child molestation to immigrate there. So good for them.
Yeah. If I'm picking who I'm going to let in my country, that would be high on the list of, nah, we don't want you. Go away. Go back to where you came from.
So now, again, I think we've talked about this before in cases like this. Whenever you have a child who is a victim, a lot of times it's not a bad defense tactic to go ahead and allow the case to be continued again and again and again, because that child gets older and they become an adult,
they don't get so much sympathy.
Yeah, the jury's less likely to give sympathy. They see that victim as an adult, not necessarily as a child. So that's can be one of the defense tactics used. Now, as you said, the trial was scheduled for July of 2008, but it was delayed because of the presidential election, because one of his lawyers, who was a former congressman, Bob Barr, was actually a libertarian presidential candidate that November. So his trial got delayed because of that, too.
If I'm the one deciding whether to delay it for that, I'd say, look, the libertarian guy never wins. You have to be here and do something worthwhile, because running for president is not.
But did you know that this Congressman Bob Barr has another claim to fame?
No, what's his other claim?
So did you ever see the movie Borat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, did he get spoofed by Borat?
He was in Borat. He appeared in it. And basically, in his scene, he met with Borat at the Capitol, because he was a congressman, and Borat gave him cheese that Borat described as being made from Borat's wife's breast milk. So he was on camera.
Eating it?
No, I don't know if he ate it or not, but I don't think it was actually from breast milk.
You like my breast milk cheese?
But again, so
this guy looks like he probably had cheese under his breast.
He had cheese somewhere. So again, and he kept asking for continuances based on health conditions and things like that. And the case, miraculously somehow, kept getting continued. So then he was traveling in September 13th, 2011, and he actually was charged in Connecticut with risk of injury to a child in violation of General Statute 5321 of Connecticut. And he was arraigned on the charge, a $50,000 bond was set, and basically what they said is that
he had a 14-year-old boy stay in a hotel room with him.
Yeah, he had a 14-year-old
boy. And that's generally frowned upon when you're not related to him.
And part of his bond was he was not supposed to have any unsupervised contact with any person under the age of 16.
And he said he was a guardian for the teen and that the teen was there to be shooting a movie.
Yeah. He had lots of excuses.
Yeah. Well, what movie is this? Did we ever see this movie?
I don't think it came out.
Yeah, I know. He had all kinds of excuses, but he was healthy enough to travel to Connecticut and shack up there.
Yeah.
Not healthy enough to stand trial, though.
I think this is one of those things. When the guy came to court, he had a cane, he had breathing apparatus help, he had all that stuff. And then when he wasn't in court, I think he may have been doing a little bit better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think they actually caught him out hiking at some point after that.
They did. Now, this guy, when I say he was litigious, I mean, he fought every single thing he possibly could in the lower court from this entire time. So, I mean, this is basically 11 years after he was initially charged.
Well, he was a computer nerd. He knew how to find all the information of what to do next.
That's right. And he did it. He fought tooth and nail and did not make it easy. So, again, to show you how he fought it tooth and nail. So, he's arrested in Connecticut on these new charges. And whenever someone's arrested out of state... And
why are you saying Connecticut?
I just say it weird.
You keep saying Connecticut.
I say it weird. I've always said
Connecticut.
Connecticut.
There you go. I just fixed you.
I don't know. I'm probably going to revert.
Don't.
I've always said it weird. People have called me out on it before, and I can't help it.
I thought you just, you know, just said it wrong once, and then when you said it wrong two more times, I had to say something.
Connecticut.
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 There's an E in there. There's no A.
Connecticut.
There's it. Connected. Connect the dots.
I can't do it. It's too hard. So anyway, he was up to that state up north, the C state. And
that sounds like the C word. That's not good.
It's going to name my boat. The C word.
Yeah.
And
will it be filled with semen?
That's...
Or are you going to let women on there too?
So anyway, he's up there. And rather than be extradited back to Georgia, which basically you have two choices whenever you're facing extradition. You can waive extradition and go ahead and be transported back to where you're facing charges. Or alternatively, you can fight extradition. And then basically what they have to do is they have to go what's called a governor's warrant or an extradition warrant, and which basically starts the extradition process. And so the governor of one state sends it to the other, and then they basically command the person to be transported to back to the state where they're facing charges.
Right.
So, I mean, he even fought that. He fought that. Then he additionally filed a writ of habeas corpus challenging the governor's warrant to go back there. But then later he withdrew his arguments, but they denied his writ of habeas corpus petition anyway. Well, so, I mean, this guy's fighting extradition. He's filing habeas. I mean, he is just being a major, major pain.
It was just like the song.
What's that?
He fought the law and the law won.
Well, the law's not winning at this point.
Well, as far as his extradition.
Yeah. So eventually he got transferred back to Georgia, and he eventually was placed on house arrest again, amazingly enough. And the only reason I can imagine why they placed him on house arrest is probably because of his medical conditions. They were probably scared that this guy's medical conditions, and if we place him in jail, he's probably going to die. Which, so be it. So... once he was actually sent back there, he had his home, which he had purchased in 1996, and it was on Norcross Road near Steve Reynolds Boulevard, which was only about a half a mile from Chesney Elementary School and less 2 miles from Shorty Howe Park. So that's the only property that he owned in that county.
Mm-hmm.
So he was living basically close to a school and placed on house arrest there when he came back to Georgia, which is amazing.
That's not good.
No, it's not good.
They should have moved the school.
You think so?
And all its inhabitants.
Well, now, the story does move along towards some sort of basically culmination of a resolution to this criminal case.
Well, I should hope so. We've got this pedophile running around now for over 13 years, and nothing's been done to him, really.
If you see his picture, I don't think he's running anywhere.
Well, he's not running.
He's wheezing and ambulating around.
But if he sat on you, you're not getting away either.
No, probably not. That would be a scary thought.
Yep.
I would not want this guy to sit on me. Before we get into that, I think we have a motion pending today.
Why, yes, if it pleases your courtship, sir, we would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, so who do we have on the docket today?
We have our good friends from BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
Well, not at the present time, but I imagine that could be a problem.
That's right. It could be a problem. And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
Sometimes you live somewhere where there's not a counselor available. They'll put you in touch with somebody who can help you.
That's right. Sometimes you just live where there's like cows and sheep and chickens and, you know.
And such.
You can talk to them, but they may not give you much advice.
And BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send your message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
Uncomfortable chairs, old magazines.
People coughing and hacking.
It's not that kind of waiting room.
Oh, okay. Is there donuts?
Probably.
Then I wouldn't mind it.
They're probably stale.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily.
Visit BetterHelp.com/court, that's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
Special offer for court-appointed listeners. You get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/court.
So the interesting thing I was touching on about where this guy lived is that state laws mandating where sex offenders can and cannot live has changed many times. So when this guy committed these crimes back in like 99 or 2000, there were certain laws that were on the books which said where they could live. Well, since then, they've probably amended those laws saying you can't live within so many feet of schools and things like that. But basically, his law, since these crimes occurred prior to 2003, there really weren't as many restrictions on him as to where he could live. And you can't change laws on that because of the ex post facto changing laws.
Right? Well, I think in those kind of cases, it should count when you actually are convicted, not when you committed the crime and how long it took for them to get around to prosecuting you.
Well, but that's not actually when you committed the crime, because basically the infraction that you committed was a certain crime on the books at that time, and that's what you're going to be tried on, not the law that changes.
But that's compromising people's safety. That's putting the victim, that's putting the criminal over the victim.
It's putting the Constitution over everything.
I'm looking to protect children, Mike. Are you against protecting children?
I'm protecting
the country. Do you not like children?
I'm protecting the country.
I'm protecting the children of this country. If the law says we don't want pedophiles near our children, then it needs to stand. I don't care what the loopholes are.
I'm protecting the loopholes and our country, because what kind of country would they live in? Would these children inherit if we don't have the Constitution?
Only a-holes would enforce loopholes.
Well, call me an a-hole then. I want to be a big one.
Well, you are.
So, eventually, he gets his way to trial. There's a trial date set in 2013. But this is kind of interesting. Before he actually gets to a trial date and eventually enters a plea, a sheriff's office spokesperson said that during the 10.5-month span when he was basically incarcerated, this is during this entire period, he had made a total of 505 filings, 228 requests, 114 pre-grievances, 75 grievances, and 22 open records requests. So if you count the weekends and that everything, that basically works out to be 3 filings every 2 days. They basically said that he was the highest maintenance inmate they could ever remember. So when he's in there, all he's doing is just filing stuff that's causing people work the entire time.
He's got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
It's obvious he didn't lift weights. I mean, those are the only two things to do. File filings or lift weights. He was filing filings.
So on the eve of trial, on December 2nd, 2013, some 13 years after the initial charge, in a plea bargaining deal, he pleaded guilty by way of Alford plea to one charge for each of the 3 victims just before the trial was scheduled to start. So basically on the eve of trial. And he was sentenced essentially to 20 years under Georgia's First Time Offenders Act, which is kind of crazy enough. And the sentence was he was to first serve 5 years on home confinement and then the rest on probation with registration as a sexual predator. Georgia's First Time Offenders Act is a law that allows some first time offenders charged with certain crimes to enter a plea of guilty or no contest, which is what he did, and avoid a conviction. And you can only be sentenced under this First Time Offenders Act on one time, so you can't do it over and over again. And so basically, the GBI, which is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, it says basically that upon a verdict or plea of guilty or no contest, but before adjudication of guilt, the court may, in the case of a defendant who has not been previously convicted of a felony, without entering judgment of guilt, and with consent of the defendant, defer further proceeding and place the defendant on probation as a first offender. So basically, they gave this guy a pretty much a sweetheart deal.
Well, I'll say, and he didn't deserve a sweetheart deal. And why would we want this guy out running around still? He's obviously a danger to children, and he's not going to change.
Well, maybe what had happened, I don't know, but maybe at this point, the victims had kind of gone their different ways. They didn't want to come forward. They had already put it past them. They didn't want to testify anymore. All those kinds of things that happen when you basically stretch a case out like this that's good for the defense probably took place. So the prosecution's case just wasn't as strong at this point.
And here again, it's one of those things where I hate those kind of pleas that he's able to, basically they did everything to him they would have done if he was guilty, but he was able to maintain his innocence.
That's right. It was an offered plea. So basically he said, I'm not saying I did it, but I'm saying the evidence is so great, there's nothing I can do to defend myself.
And this guy had come up with so many different things. Were you going to get to the part about when they extradited him from Connecticut, how they extradited him?
Oh, I was going to, yeah. Get back to it.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is one of those instances where basically justice delayed is justice denied.
Yeah, I would say so.
To quote a famous jurist.
Learned hand.
Learned hand. So now you notice I said that he was a sexual predator.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different designations. There's sexual predator and sexual sex offender, with predator being the worst one. So people that are actually prey upon people get the term, like, you know, sexual predator.
Well, he does. They said he would go around these cons and different things, handing out action figures and games and all these kind of things just to bring these young boys along.
Yeah. But he was a sexual predator. So as a sex offender, maybe the charges they have are not as egregious, so they're not, and basically the requirements for the reporting and things like that aren't as strenuous. So now, about that same time he entered that sentence back in 2013, or entered that plea, Dragon Con finally cut all ties with him, and they gave him like a cash payout for his portion of it, mm-hmm. his interest in it.
Right.
And so as of now, there's absolutely zero to do with him, other than the fact he founded it.
Yeah, he had no involvement since 2000. Yeah. They just didn't buy him out till 2013, because you're innocent until proven guilty, even right. if it takes 13 years to prove it.
Right. So also part of the plea deal, he was ordered to pay $100,000 restitution to each of the three accusers in that case, too. So that may have had something to do with it. The prosecutor was able to get a large sum of money for these now adults
mm-hmm.
when it took place. So maybe figuring that, you know, give them some money, get this guy to enter this plea, go ahead and put it behind us, get the conviction. And there's more thoughts on that, too. Later on, I want to touch on a few more different things. But, you know, it's pretty much a sweetheart deal for this guy. But I think it also, at the same time, may have not been super great for him, because I don't think he could ever really complete it, basically.
Well, and the prosecutor said that he basically was wanted to get him a sentence that he figured he couldn't complete,
right?
So that he would screw up and then they could get him with more things. Well, that's good, I guess, but I would rather go ahead and just give him the proper punishment in the first place.
Well, here's the interesting thing. So you think once the pleas entered that basically all the drama would stop there, right?
Right.
Wrong. So in 2014, less than 1 year later, he got in trouble for using social media. He was on Twitter interacting with underage children under the age of 16. And in fact, the child who he was in the bedroom with in Connecticut.
You got it right.
All right. See, it doesn't sound wrong to me.
Just like you're playing Connect Four.
So anyway, the child he was with up there in the hotel room was actually followed him on Twitter. So, and he was actually using the Twitter account kind of, he had created a while ago, but then started using it a lot. So he got in trouble for that. In 2014, he filed a contempt motion against his probation officer, which was actually dismissed. And then basically Kramer and his next attorney, McNeil Stokes, argued in court that Kramer was not permitted by Yuri Josie, the probation officer, to visit a doctor in an emergency room without Josie's permission. And basically they're trying to say they're being harsh on this guy, not let him do what he needs to do. So in that contempt motion where Kramer filed it, he and his attorney, McNeil Stokes, argued in court that Kramer was not permitted by his probation officer to visit a doctor in an emergency room without his probation officer's permission, which basically they said the probation officer said, hey, if I come to his house and he's not there, I don't know where he is. He could be in a car halfway to Tennessee with kids. I need to know where he is at all times, which I kind of agree with this probation officer.
Absolutely.
So basically, Kramer was testifying from a wheelchair with an oxygen machine attached, and at that contempt hearing basically said that he was recently diagnosed with severe pulmonary impairment, and that basically the problem was exacerbated in December when he went home to his house without heat. So he basically saying he is in a house without heat. He said, well, I was so sick when I got out of there. I got sicker, but I couldn't go to the doctor. And he said he couldn't obtain permission from the probation officer to seek emergency medical care during a medical incident, so he couldn't go get treatment. And he basically said he was alone for 2 weeks during some winter storms that took place and lived on protein packets that were 2.5 years old while he was home incarcerated.
You know what? I'm still not feeling any sympathy for him. It's just not coming through. I don't know. It must be me.
So eventually the judge denied the motion for contempt.
You know, all he's doing is he's filing all these motions to become a big enough pain where finally they say, just take him off probation, get him out of our hair. We're tired of fooling with this guy.
Well, in 2018, he filed something again, basically challenging his classification as a sexual predator because he didn't like that designation. He thought it should be something different. So he's arguing that. He's filing all these motions.
It's cramping his style.
That's right. And so, I mean, if you look at this, you read about this guy, I mean, he has probably gone through, I mean, I don't even know how many attorneys.
Sure.
You couldn't pay me enough money to represent this guy.
Yeah, I say nobody would want to stick with that guy. He wasn't, you know.
If you're the second attorney on a case, that should already be a warning sign, because there's a reason why that client usually doesn't have the same client they had. I mean, there can be legitimate reasons why people switch, but usually subsequent attorneys, that's a red flag indication or a possible thing to watch out for, you know, kind of a problem client who might not listen to you or wants to fight with you.
Well, when they went to extradite him from Connecticut, though, they were so worried about him creating problems that because they were going to fly him back.
Yeah.
And they figured that he would come up with some kind of medical emergency in midair and force the plane to land somewhere and then start the extradition all over again. So they ended up hiring an airplane ambulance that a friend of his flew that said that he would take him for basically just gas money to get him back down there.
You say a friend of his was actually the prosecuting attorney. It was his friend who owned this air ambulance thing and said, hey, I'll do it just basically for fuel costs.
Yeah. And so that's what they did to get him down there was fly him from Connecticut back to Georgia in an air ambulance so that he couldn't, you know, find some other tactic to delay it.
Now, here's where it gets really, really weird. Did you see the update about this guy?
Yes.
So in February of 2019, Kramer was arrested from his home confinement again. He was basically accused of taking photos of a boy in a doctor's office. So according to the report, officers were dispatched to a pulmonary group after they received a call that Kramer was leaving his appointment. He remained at the checkout area and was watching the boy. It says he was later seen watching the child and holding his cell phone in a manner that suggested he was photographing the child. The complainant stated that she observed the flash of the camera, and she stated that Kramer's eyes never left the boy. So he's there in this doctor's office.
Finding his next victim.
Finding his next victim. He's out. Probably there with the blessing of the probation officer because he has to go to his doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So other staff members said they actually saw the photography as well, basically saying that Kramer followed the victim with his phone head out in front of him, trailing the victim around, like basically following with it. So they said they were concerned about Kramer because he's a registered sex offender and he has the classification which he was fighting as a dangerous predator. And basically the police pulled his phone and looked at it and they found there were actually no photos on it. So he probably deleted them at some point or somehow made them go to a secret cloud or something. Who knows what this guy did?
A secret boy cloud.
That's right. So here's the weird thing. About the same time, Kramer was working for a private investigator, which seems kind of odd.
Absolutely.
This private investigator was hired by a judge there who reportedly believed that the district attorney, Danny Porter, the one who had
prosecuted
Kramer, had hacked her computer. So this judge hired a private investigator because she thought the prosecuting attorney had hacked into her computer. So
this private detective, he found information, but he didn't know how to decipher it, so he had to get a computer expert.
That's right.
So here's a guy that spends all day, every day on computers that said, oh, I'll do that for you.
Yeah, so Kramer is essentially looking into a county judge's computer that believes was hacked by the prosecuting attorney that could prosecute him.
Right. So,
basically, they were able to look at it and determine that someone had accessed the computer, but they couldn't say who.
Well, before he could file the report, he was arrested for the incident about photographing the boy.
That's true. But I think even then, they couldn't say who did it.
Well, he didn't have time to complete his investigation.
Well,
that's what he's saying.
That's what he's saying, yeah.
And he's saying that he thinks that the arrest was motivated by him being involved in that, and so the prosecuting attorney wanted him arrested before he could divulge that this guy had hacked him.
Well, it says he was preparing documentation for the judge to take to federal authorities when he was arrested.
Right.
So the investigators actually also searched his house and seized electronics and things like that. So that's still going on right now as we speak, so which is kind of the odd thing. And Porter, who is the district attorney, basically said he thinks it's illegal for the judge to allow an outsider to access her county computer, and called the Georgia Bureau of Investigation and recused himself from the prosecution. Porter said he knew nothing of the judge's suspicions about him before Kramer was arrested, and that he wasn't involved in Kramer's arrest. So he's saying, I didn't know anything about this going on.
Right.
So Kramer's attorney, Reba, basically called the arrest an abuse of power and said that Kramer believes Porter used a personal vendetta against him. Porter said he feels no personal animosity, but called the case professionally frustrating. I mean, what a strange twist of fate.
Well, I even dug a little bit further and came across an even later update.
What's that?
Well, first of all, but the reason what I was digging into is, you know, he had questioned in that what you read about whether it was legal for her to hire an outside, this judge was a she,
right,
whether it was legal for her to hire an outside group to look at a federal judge's, a county judge's computer.
Right.
So I looked through for Gwinnett County, which is which county they were in, and I looked through what it says about that. And it says, it goes under the Office of Professional Standards, and it says the Office of Professional Standards reports directly to the Office of the Chief and is responsible for the investigation of all applicants for positions within the department and the investigations of serious allegations of employee misconduct. It says these tasks are accomplished by two different units, a background investigations and recruiting unit and the internal affairs unit. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I think you would call this a serious allegation of employee misconduct because the district attorney or whatever is an employee.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that should have been turned over to that group to start with. But then besides that, if you do get an outside contractor, per se, to investigate something there, there are certain procedures that you have to go through in a bidding process. You're not allowed to, in a government structure, just hire whoever you want.
Right.
You have to go through a bidding process. So you look through on the list of your requirements, and one of the things says the following persons shall be placed on an ineligible source list pursuant to the provisions of this section for a reasonable period not to exceed 3 years. One of the things that's on here says any person who has been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude.
I'd say that involves moral turpitude.
That's what I would think. And then it also adds, along with that, any person who is owned, controlled, or managed in whole or in part by any other person described in A through E, which that's E, the moral turpitude thing. So, obviously, he wasn't the one. Kramer wasn't the one that got the contract. The private investigator was. But it's saying you can't bring in people that don't meet these either. Just because you're okay doesn't mean you can't bring in. So I guess what I'm saying is I got to kind of agree with that prosecutor. What she did wasn't right under any of this. At first, it probably should have gone to the other,
right,
the professional standards group. But when it didn't, she should have hired somebody through a bidding process, and it couldn't be someone that's a sex offender.
I just wonder how she came to the conclusion that it was this prosecuting attorney was the one that got under her computer.
I don't know, unless there was some kind of information that he had that she thought that's the only way he could have had it.
Yeah.
But now, here's the next step in that. The DA, the prosecutor, filed a motion for that Superior Court judge to recuse herself from all criminal cases, not just the Kramers,
right,
but all criminal cases. Basically, what he's saying is if she thinks that I did that, then I can't prosecute someone fairly in front of her.
Yeah.
She can't be unbiased.
Yeah.
So he has filed a motion. This is just recent. this has just been like since August or something like that of this year.
Yeah.
And filed to remove her from hearing any more criminal cases of any part, all other pending and future criminal cases in the court. It said the state does not file this motion lightly, Porter wrote, that's the DA. However, given the circumstances described in the accompanying affidavit, Georgia law requires that it be filed in an effort to preserve the integrity of our courts and judicial system. He says he calls this judge delusional that she would think he hacked her computer.
Yeah.
Now, when they sat down with her and did a deposition, she said that she didn't know who these people were and didn't know anything about it. The private investigator and right. Ed Kramer, that she didn't know any of them, didn't know anything about it. Yet she did turn around and say that she did believe that her computer was hacked and that he did it.
Yeah.
Now, if she does believe it, where did these guys get that story? If she didn't contact them, you know, did they, I mean, where would they hear that to tell that story first? And then she turned and said, I don't know those guys, but that DA did try to hack my computer.
Yeah.
So they're still going back and forth in this. And,
it's just very odd.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much involved in it and back and forth. And I mean, it's almost, this is like, I believe a totally separate issue from all the other things that have happened in this. And it's kind of coincidental, I guess.
Is it?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like it is.
Or is this guy like some sort of computer expert who basically hacked into the judge's computer
and made it look like the DA?
Made it look like the DA did it.
But then how would he know? Then did he send her a banner ad for the private investigator?
Yeah, it's product placement.
Yeah, so that she would do that?
Who knows?
I don't know. But it was wild. But it said that when they asked for a comment from this judge, she refused to supply any comment on it.
Yeah, well, that'd be an interesting case to kind of keep an eye on, see what happens. But so here we are almost, 19 years later from when this guy was first arrested, and he is in year 7 of his sentence.
Well, and what they're saying is that if they can prove that he did take the pictures of this boy or was violating his probation, then he can go to jail for a long time.
They can, yeah. They can sentence him up to the maximum time for each of the different three offenses he pled to.
And it's hard to say that, I mean, because not only did they search his phone, but because of the accusations, they searched his electronics at his house as well.
Right.
And they found no evidence of anything. They didn't find pictures. They didn't find anything they'd been involved in. So while I think that this guy is a slime bucket, I don't know, you know, and I don't know if he had a boy cloud that he sent these pictures to that nobody can find, because I'm not that smart.
Boy cloud?
Yeah. I don't know how that works exactly. But so, I mean, it's possible that he has something like that that other people aren't smart enough to figure out, because I think most people tell you the government never has the top people in a field because it doesn't pay well.
Maybe he's still using the old Radio Shack computer and a BBS system, and basically technology's passed him so far by that
nobody can look back at a bulletin board. Nobody's got his phone number.
That's right. Nobody has his phone number. He's got a landline.
He's got hooked up to a landline. It's the last known landline.
Yeah, it's definitely a very creepy scenario. He's a creepy looking kind of guy too.
But it's a shame that somebody like that can get away with something like that for as long as he has.
Yeah. Well, he'll have his just desserts at some point.
I hope so.
Well, anyway, that's the history of Dragon Con.
Well, all right, there you go. And I'll be down there. I'm going to keep an eye out for Ed Kramer. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, watch out for that guy.
Yeah, if I see a guy walking around with a herd of boys around him, I'm going to say, run! Run now!
Run! Because he's not going to catch you.
That is not a remote control.
So, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I asked Tommy different terms that we talked about. And the first one, I could not resist asking, what is a BBS?
It's a bulletin board. Station.
System. And do you remember the name of...
used to have a hamburger place called BBF.
Do you remember the name of Ed Kramer's BBS?
The Dragon.
That's right. And
thus Dragon Con.
And can you explain to me how they worked?
Yes, they were from your dial-up modem, and people could call in on your phone, and they could post messages on your bulletin board and then hang up. And other people could call in. They could read what somebody else wrote. And I bet it was very exciting.
Did the modem have to be 1,200 or 2,400 baud?
1,200.
It's a trick question. I wouldn't talk about that.
I didn't think you did.
Well, yeah, different.
But I figured I had a 50-50 chance.
Baud rate was basically how fast a modem would communicate with another computer.
Yeah.
So you had to have different baud rates on different different BBSs, and if you wanted to access it. So.
And you had to have a hot baud.
Yeah, hot baud. Now, whenever he was up in that state up north that starts with a C.
Connecticut.
Yep.
Not Connecticut.
And he had to be extradited. What was the process that took place?
Extradition.
Okay, but how did extradition take place?
From governor to governor.
That's right. They had to get a governor's warrant from Georgia and sign that and send it up north. And then basically that governor signed a warrant and then told the court to transport him, which he was actually transported via the prosecutor's buddy in an air ambulance just for the fuel costs.
And when he came in, they said, the devil went down to Georgia.
Yeah, I think he did. So it was very, very strange the way he was transported, though.
Yeah. So. Air Ambulance Express.
Now, I said that his house was near a school. Now, and basically that the current law would not allow him to have a house so close to school, but back in 2000, the law wasn't on the books. So what is the name or the legal term when you can't change the law on somebody?
We've covered that before.
We have.
Not today, but we've covered that.
I did say it.
Yeah, but you didn't say the name.
I did.
You did? I didn't hear you.
I did. I slipped it in there.
It's like lollygagging or something like that.
Ex post facto.
Ex post facto. You didn't say that. That was a long word. I would have heard that word.
I did.
That would have stuck out.
Nope, I said it. And basically, because the crime was committed back in 2000, you can't subsequently change the law and then prosecute them for something different or hold them to different sentencing standards based upon the new law.
Well, I can understand that in 99% of the cases, but when it comes to child safety, I do not think that that should hold up.
And
vote for me.
What is the difference between a sex predator and a sex offender?
Well, the sex predator is much worse. Sex offender means like maybe you flashed somebody or something, but a sex predator means you've actually done something, you know, like kidnapped somebody or sexually assaulted them or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you could, in theory, have to register as a sex offender for indecent exposure if, like, you're just out peeing
by the side of the road,
by the side of the road or something like that. You know, I mean, that you're not a sexual predator for doing that. But now, if you chase somebody down naked and try to assault them, that might be sexual predator type behavior.
Yeah, like that basketball player that got acquitted recently.
Which one?
He was in he played for Michigan State in college, and he played about 5 years in the pros. And they showed the videotape from the surveillance cameras at the hotel where he came running out of the hotel. Here goes the girl running out of the hotel, and all she's got on is a bra. That's it. Here he comes chasing her, and he doesn't have anything on. And he grabs her and is dragging her back towards the hotel room. And she's like sitting down and doing all she can do to resist. And he drags her in. And a few minutes later, here she comes back out again, running out. And he tracks her down and gets her again. And the whole time, here's a lady in a van sitting there watching all this. And he drags her back into the hotel room again. So the next day when he lets her go, she went and filed rape charges.
Yeah.
The jury saw the tape and everything else. And they said it was just a lover spat.
Really?
Yeah, and they acquitted him.
That's crazy.
I know.
Huh.
I couldn't believe it.
Based upon those facts, it sounds like it's be a guaranteed conviction.
Yeah, I know. I would have thought so, too. I don't know what they saw that I didn't see.
It just goes to show you never know what a jury's going to do.
No, you never do. You don't want to take any chances.
That's right. So sometimes that factors into play for the prosecuting attorney, just like it does for the defense, too.
But that's definitely a predator, I would think.
I would say so, too. Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. Did pretty good on them.
Well, it was a pretty good topic, and except for ex post facto, I didn't hear too many big words that I didn't know.
Changed it up on you there.
Yeah. Yeah, you slipped that in there if you said that, because you must have said it fast. You probably pronounced it wrong, just like Connecticut.
I do have some weird pronunciations for certain words. I can't help it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I am what I am. You yam what you am.
Yep.
We all get tongue-tied now and then, so that's why I gave you the benefit of the doubt the first couple times. You just got tongue-tied a little bit, but then when you persisted, then.
No, that is one word that people have called me out numerous times for saying incorrectly, and I don't know what it is.
I had a friend in high school that couldn't say spaghetti.
Really?
I mean, no matter how many times he would try, he couldn't say it. So when we would stop at a restaurant and he wanted to order spaghetti, he would order noodles and meat sauce.
Well, spell it out, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello. Welcome to another edition of Tommy's Random Thoughts. Today's random thought is food pics. Why do they exist? Why do people think that we want to see their food? All right, you're out somewhere and you get a meal and you take a picture of it. So what? You're eating dinner. You had something for dinner. It's not uncommon. Do we need to see it? If it's exceptional, there's like gold bars on there, or diamond encrusted fish, or chicken that's still alive that you eat, or something. I don't know, something unusual. Okay. Otherwise, it's just your food. Now, I have to say that has seemed to die down some, except for my co-host Mike, who seems to take a picture of every meal he eats when he goes somewhere. For example, his trip to San Diego there a couple weeks ago. I know what he had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day he was gone. Nothing looked exceptional. I couldn't taste it. What I want to know is he just saying, look, I've never eaten food like this? Or is he taunting me? I'm at home eating beans and tuna, and he's having that? Is it a taunt? Is that what it is? A long-distance taunt? I don't know. But it seems to be that the food pics have gotten replaced now by location pics. So-and-so is here. They're going here. You know, all this is let me notify everyone that wants to break into a house, I'm not home right now. This is where I'm at. You have this long to get in my house and out before I'll be back. So good luck. This has been Tommy's Random Thoughts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.